'cause I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and avocado too.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Dave Brown. Dave is one of the co-owners of Curtis and David's Winery here in Arcata. Dave, first of all, how did you start making wine?
I started with a college buddy of mine. We were friends all through school, and when I was in my land use planning classes, I would usually plan wineries, and we would sit around and wax philosophic about making wine. And he left, came back, started a winery, and I became his cellar rat, which is the term for the guy who does everything under the sun, including make the wine, selling the wine, sweeping the floors, doing everything.
And so you started doing that. So you started kind of in the back door of the industry. You started as a worker.
Sure. And it's actually a really useful way to start because you learn every little nut and bolt about the way a winery operates instead of maybe learning just the empirical part of it or, you know, the analytical part of making wine. You're working it from the ground up. From my standpoint, it's the best way to learn.
And then did you start making just some small batches for yourself and friends and family?
Bob started his winery in the mid-90s, and Kurt and I ended up being his sort of regular cellar rats. We were the guys that were doing most of the work for him. And the thought came to us when he was leaving town. He moved his winery to Woodland. We thought, well, heck, let's make a barrel of wine. And it took about 3 days for us to realize that really what we wanted to do is to make a functioning winery. We started out with a small harvest, just a few tons of grapes, and it quickly grew into a fairly large endeavor.
How many tons of grapes do you order every year?
It comes and goes, and we work on our harvest based on the economy, because buying grapes, it's kind of like buying a car with cash every year. And so on our high point, we did over 30 tons of grapes. This year, we did just under a ton of fruit, just to keep the flow going, as it were. So we moderate our production from an economic standpoint.
How do you choose where to buy your grapes from? I mean, that would be the very beginning of the process, I would imagine.
Well, to back up just a little bit, my dad collected wine, so there's always wine around the house. And I learned early on some of the areas that I thought were pretty good. And I like history. I like people. And so one of the things about wine is that wine is really people. You know, there are some terms of something like it's sunlight fermented and all those things, but it really comes down to the people that are doing it. So if you take that part and then you add in the sort of the soil science part of it, where it's grown and where the farming's done, you can come up with the taste structure that you really are thinking about going after. And so we just started looking around at places that we were interested in working with grapes from. And then we started talking to the people. And a lot of times it's cold calling. People will place ads. Right now, there's a lot of fruit available on the market, so it's not hard to find good fruit. What really you want to go for is a long-term relationship with the growers to provide a consistent product for the marketplace. But from our standpoint, we really want to work with fruit that is grown by people that we really like, that are good people, and that also fruit that's grown without a lot of manipulation. You have to do physical manipulation of the grapes, thinning of the clusters or pruning the grapes over the course of the year. But for instance, we don't want to work with fruit that has been sprayed. I prefer to work with fruit that's certified organic. We do have a good amount of our grapes are coming from certified organic vineyards. Pretty much all of it is coming from either dry farmed, meaning it receives no water during the course of the year, or it's given minimal watering. So that the grapes are really doing their thing.
When you find varieties of grapes, I know one of the issues that seems like it's coming up more and more is that people are having to make the decision to remove some of the older varieties of fruits that, you know, for some reason aren't selling quickly. And so some things are actually disappearing. Are you able to kind of work with farmers to keep that from happening?
Well, one of our big problems is we're a real, just a drop in the bucket winery when you look at it across the board. For instance, we were working with an old Mendocino field blend in our early production years that was just fantastic. And it was one of the old original blocks of what was called mixed black. They were going to replant it to Petit Syrah, which we now produce. And it was an economic decision for them. And really at that point, no amount of money that we were going to offer them was going to hold on to that fruit. And so typically people will make an economic decision to replant or graft over their vineyard over to another varietal. The other one is that grapes, they have a lifespan. Now, some grapes have a really, really long lifespan, but others it's shorter, and so you have to replant the vineyard as time goes on.
What is the really long lifespan for?
Well, I've had Zinfandel wine, and also had just tasted the grapes from 140-year-old vines in the Riverside area. Strange but true. And grapes are going to follow the soils and the farming practices. So sometimes they'll last a lot shorter than that, say maybe 10, 15 years. Other varietals will stay, you know, say 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
So what's the process? You've ordered your grapes. Would you order them?
In the wine business, however you want to work it, it'll work. Yeah, we will make the arrangements to buy the fruit. We supply the harvest bins. We do all of our own transportation. Like I said, the only thing we don't have up here is a chateau. We supply the harvest bins. All of our grapes are hand harvested. And so on the harvest day, we'll go down and pick up the fruit. Typically, grapes now, especially in Napa and in Sonoma and getting more into Mendocino, people are night harvesting. So the fruit comes off the vine cold and it arrives at the processing facility cold, which is an important thing. So we go down and pick up the fruit, haul it back here to Arcata, and then we process it here. We make only red wine, and so for us, we then run it through a stemmer crusher. It's a machine that crushes the fruit and then takes the stems and a lot of leaves and things like that out of the must, it's called, and deposits them off to the side, and then what's left is the must. That conglomeration of bits of stem and grape skins, seeds, the pulp, the juice, they ferment in a fermenter.
Is it the skin, then, that makes it the red wine?
Yes. There's only one out there that, you know, you'll see in California. That's Alicante Boucher. That's a red juiced grape. But yeah, we get the red color from the skin.
So you got all this stuff together. And what's the next step? Is it go into a vat and then kind of bruise for a little while?
Well, it depends. Some people are using large fermentation vessels. And we use open top small fermenters that'll hold up to a ton of fruit at a time. And our process is to, instead of either chemically or using temperatures to manipulate the extraction of color or the extraction of flavors, we do it by addition of just sawdust to use the tannic acid that's available in the wood to fix the color and to add structure to it. And it will rest there for a while. That is really up to how we feel that the wine needs to taste. And it's called a cold soak, and it may take up to a week.
Do you taste it at this point? And it's got sawdust in it.
Sure.
Okay.
And it's got everything else in it. It's actually some of the best juice you'll ever have. It's just great. I like to stand underneath the crusher, the machine, and just put a cup out and drink the juice as it's coming out. But it'll stay there until we decide to start the fermentation. We use cultured yeast to ferment, mainly because the temperature here is not hot enough to really sustain a full fermentation. If you do it indoors or you insulate the area that the fermentation is going to happen in, you can get it to go all the way through reasonably well, but just so that we make sure that it gets all the way done, we use cultured yeast. And then the only thing that we might help it along with are things that people might eat. When I was in college in the dorms, I used to put a lot of brewer's yeast on whatever I was eating, and that's one of the B vitamin additives that we use is just that kind of stuff. Then the wine ferments, and here in Humboldt County, down on the coast, it can take up to 20, 30 days sometimes to get all the way through the fermentation cycle.
Well, I can't wait to hear what is going to happen with this wine in our next show. This has been Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Dave Brown, and we're going to talk more about what happens to the wine next week.
Come on to my house, I'm going to give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm going to give you apple, plum, and every god I do.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU and KHSR for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.